We've now come down to Cannon Street, or Candlemaker Street, and there's a rather curious object stuck in number 111. It's a piece of plate glass and a Portland stone surround, but an ancient stone is stuck in it behind plate glass. It's very strange, this. It's called the London Stone, and nobody quite knows what it represents. The legend has it, it was probably part of the Roman governor's palace. Some Clipsum limestone come from Rutland, and it was this central arch or keystone, large stone. The Romans were here in the year 43, first of all, with the Emperor Claudius. The emperor had to invade something, and this is all that was left, basically, but it came across here and established Britannia and Londinium, called it Londinium. Nobody quite knows where Londinium comes from. It may come from the Celtic words Llyndin, which meant the place by the lake. But anyway, they called it Londinium. It was a very successful trading centre. It was remarkable, really, and very successful up to the 5th century. Then there was a crisis in Rome. There were invasions from Vandals and Visigoths, and they had to recall the legions. So Britain had to defend itself, did so for a bit, but then we had invasions from Vikings and Saxons and raping and burning and pillaging. Everything fell apart. And it was refortified, and by the time of King Alfred of the 9th century. And this stone, this bit of Roman rubble, was used as a central marker point for the city. And it said if you touch the stone, you'd have great good fortune and great good luck. And it comes in one of Shakespeare's plays, a character called Jack Cade, a leader of rebellion in the Wars of the Roses in 1450, broke across London Bridge with his Kentish rebels and galloped into Cannon Street and hit the stone with his sword and said, "Now Mortimer," he called himself Mortimer at this point, "is lord of this city, and here sitting upon London Stone, I charge and command that of the city's cost, the pissing conduit, run nothing but claret wine this first year of our reign." Hugely popular statement, of course, but it didn't really seem to work because he died of wounds several weeks later. But there it is. Now, the legend has it, if this stone disappears from London, the city will collapse, like taking the ravens from the Tower of London. So come back here, please, on the 1st of January 2021, the true Brexit date, and make sure that's still there. Otherwise, we're in severe trouble. Now, talking of Londinium, I have composed a little ditty about Londinium, and it goes like this. Londinium, Londinium, two hills on a river, the city of takers and sometimes a giver. It's good for your brain, man, but not for your liver. Londinium, Londinium, Londinium. Londinium, Londinium, it stands on the clay, two gravel mounds where the leaders have played. Ludhill for the church, Cornhill for the bankers, we sing praise to God, and the bankers will thank us for pouring our money into their dark coffers. They render it useless, turn round and make offers to sell it back to us, then charge us commission, bankrupt and screw us, show no inhibition. Londinium, Londinium. And what of your history, Londinium, Londinium, where Hadrian stepped in his new condominium, where boats were offloaded from Europe and Asia, and plague, fire and floods here have failed to erase you, where 10,000 bombs were a mere passing phase here, Londinium, Londinium, Londinium. Londinium, Londinium, the bridge on the water, the millions crossed over, the banker, the porter, where kings rode in triumph, and some to the slaughter, to ride underneath it would make your life shorter, Londinium, Londinium. Londinium, Londinium, your cash buys its loyalty, it kowtows to no one, not even to royalty. 1,200 billion of paper and pledges they fold into darts and throw them hedges. My word is my bond, sir, we don't have to sign it. The forecast was wrong, sir, I'll have to decline it. No guarantees here, no spin and opinion, we turn with the breeze here. Londinium, Londinium, Londinium. Moving on, down to Walbrook. Walbrook takes its name from the fact there was a stream here. It's still there, but it's underground. But just over there, a sculptor an artist has raised it up, and there these strange snaking green and grey roots lace down towards the running water. It's like an illustration by Arthur Rackham out of a children's fairy book. It's quite something. I'm expecting Gollum to appear there any second. Look down the street there. You've got this large building, sandy-coloured building, the Bloomberg Centre after Michael Bloomberg, ex-mayor of New York and Democratic hopeful. And they did excavations for this some years ago and discovered a huge amount of Roman London. A lot of Londinium was here, so mosaics and glass and bones and heaven knows what. They've even re-established the temple to Mithras, the god of the legions, here in its original site. You can see that online for free. In the distance, you've got a rather handsome church tower. That's St. Stephen Walbrook, another church by Sir Christopher Wren. And that is where the Samaritans were established in the 1950s, where he felt suicidal, he'd phone up the priest and talk to him. And beside it is a small shrine to the patron saint of coffee, St. Arbuck's. Turning around there, we go down Cannon Street, across Cannon Street, and we find Dowgate Hill. And there we find rather handsome coat of arms. It says CTC, the Company of Tallow Chandlers. Now, they are one of the old livery companies of the City of London, 110 of these altogether, and they elect the Lord Mayor every year. They themselves are not elected, but they elect the Lord Mayor. It's a curious piece of medieval corruption that's still carrying on. Each of them has their patron saint. If you look up, you can see there's an icon there of an angel holding a severed head. That's John the Baptist, because he talked about the light of the world, and he's after all a candle maker, so that's their patron saint. And they started out as funeral benefit societies and later on fixed the standards of trade, and London established itself in the Middle Ages as a place for good quality trade. You could trust a London merchant. What you got was what was stated as an actual statement on the stock exchange: dictum meum pactum, my word is my bond. These days, read the small print in the emails. But a bit further down, you've got the Skinners Company there. The Skinners, they used to make money out of furs, out of ermine, of musquash and fox and sable. All these merchants had to have fur trimming on their gowns. And they're at number 6 in order of precedence. The order was established in the 16th century. Number 1 are the mercers at Elton Cloth. Number 2, the grocers, spices. Number 3, the drapers. Number 4, the fishmongers. Number 5, the goldsmiths. Number 6, the skinners. Number 7, the merchant tailors. And number 100, the information technologist. Still being created. Being at number 6 meant you were high up in the procession. You were quite close to Thorbecke. Shows your prestige, the fact you've done a great deal for the city and donated money for it and stuff like that. But merchant tailors said, oi, in a minute, that's not right. We should be at number 6, not number 7. And fights took place in the streets in the 15th century. Two young boys were killed, and the mayor, Bilston, said, I'm fed up with this. As a penance, the Skinners, you've got to move down to number 6. And the merchant tailors were up to number... Sorry, Skinners moved down to number 7, and merchant tailors were up to number 6. So you alter your positions. And the next year, you can change around again. That's why, if you don't know where you are, you're at 6s and 7s. Past there, we have the Dyer's Company with leopards with different coloured spots. We've even just passed by the Worshipful Company of Management Consultants. Round the corner we go, and we will find, oh, there it is, the Innholders Company. Innholders Company. Rather fine coat of arms here, with two horses either side. These are people who deal with hospitality, restaurants, hotels, that kind of thing. You have oak sheaves in the centre for the horses. Above is the Star of Bethlehem. And underneath, Hinc spes effulgit, hope shines from here. Now, they're extremely wealthy, the companies. When merchants died, they left money or property to the company. And what they do these days is a lot of charitable work. I mean, the goldsmiths look after adult education in South East London, Goldsmiths College. And the haberdashers, drapers and brewers will look after schools. And the dyers look after Leeds University. Now, we're going to go a bit further on. Ah, now here's an interesting church. This is the church of St. Michael Paternoster Royal. The Paternoster bit is our father, and the royal bit, not to do with royal families, to do with Leroy from Bordeaux, a wine imported district. But let's go inside. Quite magnificent stained glass in here. The old glass was burst out in World War II, and a man called Hayward made these magnificent windows. You've got St. Michael the Archangel up there, beating Lucifer down to hell. And the Madonna and Child on the left, and on the right-hand side, you've got the Archangel Gabriel dealing with the serpent of the tree of knowledge, and there's Adam and Eve underneath. But a window just over there, now, who's that? There's a picture of a city above, and the young man with his knapsack and his cat. Richard Whittington, Dick Whittington, Lord Mayor four times over. Now, if you're Lord Mayor once, you're pretty successful. It means you've done a, you know, you've done a great deal in business, because he had to pay for banqueting and feasts and stuff like that. He was Lord Mayor four times over. Now, the legend has it, as a young boy trying to find a job in London, coming from Gloucestershire, could find no work. Got as far as the Highgate Hill, sat down very depressed, and the city was below him, all the steeples there, and the bells started to ring. And they seemed to call to him, saying, "Turn again, Whittington, Lord Mayor of London." Okay, give another go. Came back, got a job, became quite successful. Invested in a voyage going to Morocco to buy spices, and he lent his own cat to the ship. Now, when they got to Morocco, this cat somehow, single-handedly or single-pawedly, wiped out a plague of rats. The emperor was so thrilled, he gave it a huge trade concession, became extremely rich and Lord Mayor. Now, that's the children's story, but one is a play called Puss in Boots. There's an animated version with Antonio Banderas playing the resourceful cat a few years ago. The truth is different. He imported coal, he imported cloth. The little boats he used were called cats, small enough to go through London Bridge's arches and offload. He also invested in royal expeditions. King Henry V went to France and defeated the French at the Battle of Agincourt, 1415, came back in triumph, and during a royal banquet, the Lord Mayor, Richard Whittington, took all the royal debts, believed to be worth something like £60,000 then, we're talking 15th century, burnt them in front of the king, and gave the king a further £2,000 in gold coin. And the king said, "I am very pleased. You may now sit by me." So Lord Mayors and Kings and Queens always sit side by side when they're in the City of London, illustrating the very close relationship kings and queens, or governments, have with the City of London trade and finance. When a bomb fell on the church in 1940 exposed his grave, they found a few bones and the remains of a mummified cat who was buried with one of his cats. The reason we remember Whittington is the fact that he gave a lot of money away. He had no children. He gave money to the prison, to the hospital, and to the Guildhall, and the library, and also London's first public toilet. So, a pretty important guy. The thing is, this area is still very important. And before the Brexit debacle, this area of 700 acres was generating 15% of the gross national product. A bit further on, another church, not going inside this one, but a strange statue outside it. Here we have St. James Garlick Hythe. There was a harbour here. Hythe means harbour, and garlic was offloaded and spices. Then you've got this weird thing there of a gentleman with a staff on his shoulder and a swan below. Now, swans are regarded as royal ever since the 12th century. And only a king or a queen was allowed to eat a swan. And the queen is called the seigneur of swans. But Prince Philip has actually offered a swan to eat. And he tasted it and said, "Yes, it's just disgusting." But the royals were allowed to use the swan's down, the feathers, for their pillows and mattresses. And if a king was firing his arrows were flecked with the white feathers, just the king. But in the 15th century, the vintners and dyers allowed a concession, allowed to have some of these swans. They have a ceremony every year called Swan Upping. They dress in scarlet uniform, row in small skiffs up the Thames, find the young swans, and get the young swans, get to their beaks and mark two nicks or two marks on the beaks of the vintner swan, one nick with the dyers, and the queen swans have no mark on them. So the old saying is two nicks for the vintners, one nick for the dyers, and the queen swans have no knickers at all. Terrible joke. Okay. Now just across there, you've got the Vintners Company, and we've got a special privilege there. King Charles II came to a dinner there. There were importers of wines. The vintners had been drinking quite a bit. At the end of it, it was the master's turn to stand up and say, "God save the king." He was completely plastered, couldn't stand up. He said, "Never mind, he can do it sitting down." So only three groups can really say God save the queen sitting down. The Vintners Company, the Lincolns and Lawyers, because they got drunk with Queen Elizabeth I, and the Royal Navy, who were permanently drunk in any case. Now, on those old ships, you couldn't stand up, so you had to sit down saying God save the king. Now, the Church of St. James Garlick Hythe, very fine church, and you've got golden grapes around the gate there. And can you spot in the pediment, the triangular part there, a scallop shell? So this is a pilgrim's church. It's the church
of St. James of Compostela, Santiago de Compostela. Jerusalem was closed for a while because the Muslims had taken it, and so people went to northern Spain on pilgrimages, and that's the scallop shell. So you see one of those, you know you've got good hospitality there. Okay, now we're going to go up Garlic Hill after Garlic Hythe and turn round and head towards Sir Christopher Wren's masterpiece, St. Paul's Cathedral.